HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 390, recorded live Thursday, September 12th, 2013. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Franz Bauma about the state of object relational mappers in .NET.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking to Franz Bauma, author of LLBL Gen and expert on data access. How are you?
Hi, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, this is great. It's always good to talk to experts, and I'm happy to talk to you. I haven't seen you in person in a long time, but we're joined on Skype here, so this is great. I wanted to talk to you because you have you're a consultant with a product of your own, right? It's you. It's one guy. It's not a team of 50 people who work on this product, is it?
No, it's just me developing the product and two support guys who are doing the support for me.
Mm-hmm. And it's very mature. This has been around for years. You've been doing this for how long now?
I started developing it in late 2002 and released the first version in September 2003. So it's about 10 years.
Yeah. Okay.
That,
wow.
It's on the market.
So it's interesting because while people have been talking in .NET about what the right way to access relational data is, there's been this kind of ongoing argument about, well, do I use link to SQL? Oh, no, you can't. That's dead. Or do I use nhibernate? That's the alt.NET thing to do. Or do I use entity framework? That's the official Microsoft way to do. You actually have chosen to float above that kind of, as an abstract mapping layer, and you support all of those and your own framework.
Yes. Well, first I supported my own framework, but as we are a commercial product, and Entity Framework and then Hibernate are free, as well as Link to SQL, we have to compete against a free product, which is very hard. Additionally to that, lots of people wanted POCO classes to be persistent to the database, and we don't support POCO classes.
POCO meaning plain old CLR objects,
yes,
for people
yes.
who don't know.
So to provide them with an alternative, but still enable them to do the best data access in their project, I thought, well, what if I support the other main OM mappers in my designer and also do model first? And so I chose these three, Link to SQL and Hibernate and an entity framework, to support them as well. The system is flexible, so I can decide to support another one tomorrow if I want to.
Mm-hmm. And you know how entity framework though says you can do things code first or design first or model first? Yeah, have you picked one? I mean, by having people start with a designer, that's how you do it. You don't have code first, right?
I don't have code first, no. I started with database first, so pointed to a database. It will read all the table definitions, view definitions, and so forth, and reverse engineer an abstract entity model from that at the level of NEOM ORM. Object role modeling, and generate code from that abstract model and the mappings. So, but a lot of people said, "Well, I want to start with a clean slate. I don't have a database, and I want to define a model and generate code from that and a database. Or, additionally, I have a database, but I want to make changes on that database, but not in a way that they used to be to do, like change a table here, change a field there, but in a more structured manner, like I want to change it in the real model that's behind everything."
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason I added model first to the designer, so people have the choice between starting from scratch or maintain the model in a model first fashion, or simply point it to the database, pull the relational model data in, and go from there.
Do you think that developers, perhaps maybe developers that are just getting started, get confused about what exactly it is that they're persisting? Like, do you think that they think that their databases store objects?
I think they do. A lot of developers, what they see every day is their code and their objects, like a user object or a customer object in their own application. And that has to be persisted somewhere. So what they want is, okay, I tell some other object to persist this customer or these orders, and so I can get them back later. And the less friction they can get with that action, the better. And there's something to say for that. The only thing is, they are not storing objects, they're storing data. And the data can be stored in a different format in the database, because other applications have to consume that data again in another form, like, for example, a report server or a website who has to display the information in a different form. But that's totally abstract away from the developer if they simply see the objects in their application.
So how important do you think it is that when someone is working with an OR mapper that they need to really know what's going on? Because I feel like a lot of work has been put into trying to hide the fact that we're putting objects in databases, and then other products feel really strongly about making it clear that these are just projections that we're working with.
Well, I don't have raw numbers, but what I've read in most research is that a lot of time is spent in the database, like 40% or some in most applications. So if you just do as if the database isn't there, it's just one method call, then you won't realize how important how big the impact will be when you just save like 10,000 objects into the database, for example.
Because it's just being hidden. Like, they'll just say, here's a list of objects, and they don't realize what that turns into?
Yes. Like, for example, when you see people query tens of thousands of objects to find one, for example, to update and then send the whole set back to the database, because they don't realize how big the work will be on the other side.
And how does this start? What is it that made people forget that these things happen? I mean, back in the day when I was going and writing SQL, and frankly, when I was string concatenating SQL together,
yeah.
I may have been breaking rules by string concatenating SQL, but I sure knew when it was an object and when it wasn't.
Well, I think it started when people realized that you can do a lot of work in a couple of lines of code. So that makes people think, hey, I can do a lot of things together, and I can query this, and I get a couple of objects back, and I loop through them, and I change some property, and I save it back. Hey, man, work done. Let's move on to the next work item. And as soon as you see that you can do a lot of work with a couple of lines, you don't realize anymore what's beneath the surface. I think it's the same thing with, for example, when you write your first web page in ASP.NET, you don't realize how much code is generated behind that page to actually render the page you've written in a couple of lines.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you realize how much work is actually going on at runtime, you will sooner or later make the mistake that you think your code is fast, but it isn't.
Doesn't it feel like we as an industry are kind of oscillating back and forth between hide lots of things and be powerful and be productive, and then we get panicky after a little while, and then we switch back? Like, we were doing web forms, and now we're talking about NANSI and web API.
Yeah.
We were doing a link to SQL, and now we're talking about things like Dapper and Massive, where people say, oh, just learn SQL. That's the right way to do things. How do you, as a product that's been around for 10, 11 years, deal with those oscillations, because some people are moving us towards these micro frameworks where they say less is more.
Yeah, in one way, you have to make a choice. Like, will I support a different set of features, like Dapper-like features, for example, where you can just write a simple query that is very fast, but obviously has less features around it? Or do I say, well, if you want to use Dapper, use Dapper, and I'm stick with the feature set and the road I've chosen. And it's not always easy to make these choices. What I'm seeing now, for example, is that a lot of people will use read-only databases, for example, like NoSQL database of denormalized schemas for read-only parts of their application. And I'm thinking about adding functionality that you can create sub-models from your real model to create these read-only projections. So you can, for example, say I have a customer order details product kind of relationship abstract model.
Right.
And I create a projection from that, like customer and order in one set. And I define that on the model. So my designer can generate code for you to keep that in sync. So you just have a projection system on your customer and order. And the system I generate for you will keep automatically your read-only set in sync with that.
Would it be fair to call that read-only set a view model? Are you basically putting in view model support?
Yeah, for example.
Okay, so, interesting.
So the advantage, obviously, is that when your real model changes, your read-only model changes with it. So you don't have to go back and forth. Hey, I changed something in here. Oh, I have to change it also in the read-only model because it's depending on the other model.
Interesting. That's kind of like a non-database specific view. Like I might have customer orders and customer details, and then in SQL Server, I might in the old times made a customer order detail view that I would then use and then apply to a view and then
yes.
Okay, so then you're talking about putting that in the model itself and then generating that. So then someone could choose to consume that model or that view model now, that read-only model, rather than consuming the more direct data access model.
Yes, and you can also then think about, hey, shall I store it in a NoSQL database for you automatically and keep the things in sync by generate some helper code for you?
Mm-hmm.
Or additionally, add some service code for you so you can enable it via web API, for example.
Mm-hmm. I've worked on a lot of large enterprise applications, and sometimes, and this is a little bit jaded, sometimes I feel like the app spends most of its time just moving data from one format to another, kind of, and not just once or twice, but like three or four times as it makes its way through the system. And then you ask yourself, what exactly does this application do? So my question is, how important is it to have a data access layer and a business objects layer and all these different layers from repository to data access to da, 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 as it moves its way when you're just doing text boxes over data in a web application?
Well, if it clutters your view on what you're really doing, then I think, well, it's not really helping. But if you can abstract away functionality that's otherwise complex to comprehend, then I think adding another layer is good, because you can focus on that layer only to solve the problem at hand. I'm not always a fan of what's common these days, that you have, for example, a data access model in code, and you have a view model somewhere else, and yet another model in your JavaScript code on the client. So it's always model for data in model, and you have to keep everything up to date when you change one, for example, the source model. So I think when you're doing three or four models in a chain for getting data from one place to another, I think it's a bit overly complex. But I also think it depends on the application at hand and, of course, development teams. I mean, you can have split development teams per layer. So one team works with one model and the other team works with another model, which is maybe a subset.
So given that if you have an abstract entity model like you've got, and whether it be in your product or whether someone has gone and created an abstract entity model, I used to make them in XML and do a lot of code generation and a roll your own kind of an example. You can generate a data access layer. You can generate business objects. You can generate SQL. You can generate stored procs. How much generation should you go with? Could you potentially start generating Angular and client-side JavaScript models now that I have this abstract stuff?
Yes, no problem. With validation and all on the properties embedded, just one click away.
And you do that now?
No, but I can add it in a week or so. It's just a template.
It's just a template. Okay, so this is a really useful point. So I'm trying to understand your philosophy. I mean, in the process, I'll understand the product, but I'm more interested in the philosophy. Because you've got that kind of authoritative abstract data model. And when I said something that I thought was an impressive and revolutionary idea, like, couldn't you generate? You're like, of course, it's just a template. So ultimately, you everything comes from this core abstract authoritative source, and you can generate whatever you want to generate.
Yeah, because what you generate are just projections from the model to a different form. Mm-hmm. And the model is not something that comes falling out of the sky. It's really the modeling of entity definitions you see in a domain. For example, if you have to write a software product for a shoe factory, they have customers, they have materials, they have designs for shoes, all those kind of things are really abstract entity definitions, and you can create a model from that or multiple models. Mm-hmm. And they form relationships with each other and inheritance, and they have properties which are called attributes. And that model alone, you can project to different forms. Like, I can project it to code, and I can project it to relational database models, but I can also project it to a NoSQL database or to a service. It's just a projection I can define on that abstract model. And as soon as I define the projection, I can generate code with it.
Doesn't that put a lot of responsibility, though, on your abstract model? I mean, it suddenly has a lot of responsibilities. It knows a lot about the database. It knows a lot about data types. It knows a lot about lengths and constraints. And now it starts knowing about business objects, and it knows about a database. For example, a database string length might be different from a client-side string length. I mean, maybe, ideally it wouldn't, but, you know, things are different. That puts a lot of pressure on this abstract model.
Yes, that's true. It's hard not to fall into the pitfall where you have just one source for information for everything in your application. Like, you have various tools on the market where you can just define a data model and you can generate from the database to the UI from it. Mm-hmm. So what I have currently is the abstract model with the mapping definitions and the relational model data and the code generation. But on top of that abstract model, I can define different models, which are projections from the abstract model, but again, are just a model. And for example, I can define a model for the client side, which has, for example, different string lengths or doesn't have string, because the target for that model is not something .NET. And a projection from one model to the other is what my tool should do for you. So the new model that's defined on the abstract model then can be used as a source for generation for client-side JavaScript, for example.
I see. So if I'm understanding correctly, there is an abstract model, but then there can also be models of models. I mean, you can chop off a piece of this and then create another view on top of that that is a different model.
Yeah.
And then from that, generate.
Yeah.
I see. So then perhaps that secondary model could have more context, more information, more attributes that are specific to the problem. So the closer it gets to the user, the more it looks like what the user expects, the user being the client of this model.
And that specific part, models of models, is what I'm researching right now for the future versions of LLBLGen. Mm-hmm. Because at one moment you realize you have built everything except email. What's left for OR mapping is you have entities, you have classes, you have tables, and the mappings between them, and everything works. And what's left? Well, there is a lot left, but it's all built on top of that basis. So that's what I'm researching right now. That models which are projected from the abstract model is one route into the future for my work.
Do you think, though, that the kind of the rise of document databases, where someone can just take some JSON and throw it into a database, will eventually kill the relational database? Or do you think the relational database is just so much more optimized because of things like strong typing and transactions that the document databases and NoSQL databases and things like that will never?
Well, I think each database form has a strong points and weak points, and when you use just one database form for everything in your application, you will run into the negative side of the database form you've chosen one way or the other. When you choose a document database, you will sooner or later run into the aspect that eventually consistency is something you have to solve in your application code. It's not something that will be solved by the database you've chosen. So when you choose a relational database and you scale out to a lot of servers, you suddenly run into the situation that you cannot do very efficient transactions across those servers without a lot of costs. So how to solve that? I think it's especially the coming years, 4 years, 4 or 5 years, I think it's that developers more and more will choose different forms of databases for different parts of their application. So the line of business transactional ordering systems will likely be still on relational databases, but other parts of the application which can use more read-only data will, for example, move to a NoSQL database. But you see also now more and more research in the NoSQL corner, where you have NoSQL databases with full asset compliance, like HyperText, or FullDB. Those are databases with NoSQL aspects, but you can fully use them in an asset style, like a relational database. So I don't know if they will be useful in every application, but there are more and more choices on the market, but I still think the relational database will keep their part of their share of the market. It will just be a little less than they have now, because most developers will simply choose, well, we use a relational database because the DBA says so, or I know that it will work, and that will maybe that group will grow. Will shrink, but I don't think the NoSQL databases will kill them. I mean, in 89, I started university at 89, and my roommate was graduating on object databases. That's so many years ago, and they still aren't the choice for most developers.
No, I was going to say, it seems to me like one of the funny things that people forget about around relational databases is how it has kept organizations apart. Like I recently spoke at a kind of quote unquote large enterprise, and like literally the database people sat on one side of the room, and they clearly don't hang out together.
No,
they don't have a relationship, whether it be cordial, like let's have lunch, or literally, if you want a stored proc filled, created, you fill out some kind of a form and you ask for it, and then you wait. And yeah. I think that those things have made people hate relational databases.
Oh,
those
absolutely.
Organizational issues more than the technical issues.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you remember Usenet, the news groups. There were a lot of database-oriented news groups, for example. And if you asked a question where, I generate some dynamic SQL and I have a problem with that query, and you were totally killed there by all kinds of stored procedure warriors, which said one thing only: keep everything inside a database. Business logic, data access logic, no matter what, everything should be in a database. And I think that group with that strong opinion about databases, which are mostly DBAs, because it's their territory and they have responsibility about the server, and if a developer ruins everything, it's their fault. So they are protecting their kingdom with a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I think that will stay on till someone says inside that organization, well, we work for the same team and you have to help each other. But until then, it will be water and fire, I think, yes.
Yeah, or oil and water. It's definitely a problem. And hopefully, better tools, better understanding, and more authoritative models will cause those barriers to break down, because there's no reason that a relational database can't be as agile as throwing a document into a blob.
No, of course not. What a lot of developers forget is that starting a project is easy when you have an empty database and you change a couple of fields in the database or in the entity, and you say, hey man, I have to have three new fields in that table. But once it's in production and has a lot of data in the database, changing something like splitting a table isn't trivial. So the guy who has to do that has to write scripts and tests and maybe pull an all-nighter to get it working. And the developer who is requesting it has to make a strong point to get that change through. And I think that that's reasonable, because the work to make a change is so much bigger than when you are developing with an empty database before release for your application. So I think a lot of developers forget how much changes, how much work a single change can be in a production database, for example. And on the other hand, the DBA forgets how much trouble it will be if he or she doesn't make a change to a database quickly. So a development team has to wait for a change on a table or a change on a relationship.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think that agility is the thing that's going to define the technologies of the future. I talk to people about the cloud and I say, you don't need to fax your IT department to get a virtual machine. Like that's just criminal. If you need to get your job done, the other team that's standing in your way, is on the same team, right? Your job is to get the business done. So work with that team. And it's just as criminal to make someone wait a week for a stored procedure or a view.
Yeah, absolutely. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today, Franz.
Okay.
We'll put links to Franz's blog, his Twitter, and his product LLBL Gen up on the show notes. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.